Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to hit subscribe when you are there. Camden Mulder is here from National Review to talk about what has to happen with the pro-life movement in the ongoing back and forth between Planned Parenthood and funding and the overturning of Roe versus Wade, all that stuff. We have the left's climate change jihad seeming to unravel a little bit more. We'll look at the latest on that, but we're going to start by doing the continued consequences of Joe Biden. Yeah, you thought it was over. Unfortunately, it's not, because the decisions made during Joe Biden's administration continue to echo throughout our society. We were talking about what we were going to what was going to be the plan for today's program early in the morning, and we discussed a bunch of different monologue ideas, and you know, this is what we do every day as we prepare the show for you. And honestly, we could have used this title for any of them. It was all the topics we were talking about come directly from the attitudes taken during the Joe Biden administration and the fallout that has covered our society, honestly, in a terrible turn of events. We, of course, saw this over Thanksgiving when we saw the death of a National Guard member. What we know about the National Guard members who were victims of the D.C. shooting, we know Sarah Beckstrom. She was killed, 20 years old. Jeez, 20 years old, man, this sucks. And Andrew Wolf, who is still with us, struggling at this point in critical condition. The latest I heard was that maybe there's some positive signs, but still critical conditions. So we're praying for the families of both, and of course, the National Guard members themselves. Trump invites families of two National Guard members shot in D.C. to White House, plans to honor the soldiers. He says Andrew is fighting for his life and his parents are unbelievably great people, highly religious people. Trump said they're praying and they want everybody to pray for Andrew and he has a chance to make it. I said, when you're ready, because that's a tough thing, come to the White House. We're going to honor Sarah, Trump told reporters, and likewise Andrew, recovery or not. You know the story probably at this point where these two National Guard members were killed by a man who is an Afghan national who was brought here in the aftermath of the horrific, awful Joe Biden withdrawal from Afghanistan, a catastrophe that continues to ripple throughout our society. And the consequences of having Joe Biden as your president are something that we're all feeling on a day-to-day basis. And that is, it's awful. I mean, he really did a number on us. I will say that. And of course, we have the immediate reaction, which of course goes to politics and finger pointing. And the finger pointing is clear here. Deranged, I like this. Deranged libs immediately blame Trump for National Guard shooting. Now, how is this possible? Here's some examples. Call to activism, left wing Twitter account breaking. Both National Guard members who were shot in Washington, D.C., just one block from White House, have died from their injuries. Of course, that's not true. But again, when is that ever the consideration when posting something? God bless them and their families. History will wonder what we're all thinking. Why did Trump have to punt them in harm's way for a stunt? Yeah, that's sure. It's a stunt. Governor Patrick Morris, he gave a relatively heartfelt situation in response to this. And the response from Brian Butler, they should not have been there. You sent them to die for a stunt. Keith Olbermann took a break from, taking in 17-year-old runaways to say, Trump put them in harm's way, fash. Now, fash in this particular sense is short for fascist, which he said about every Republican he's ever come across for as long as anyone's known him. And considering my favorite clip of Keith Olbermann from back in the day, outside of the ones where he's, finding a new teenage partner, is when he said, Mr. Bush, you're a fascist. You need to print a T-shirt that says fascist on it. Because that was his big attack of the day against the president at that time. Well, hopefully he brings that one back because that really worked well. Uniquely American heartbreak of yet another tragedy from the New York Times editorial board. This one's going to be tough to get through, but let me just attempt it. We should also not lose sight of the uniquely American nature of this tragedy. Let me stop for one second right there. There's nothing unique about a person being shot and killed in a country. That's not unique at all. Like, if you want to go to mass shootings, you can go and find some unique situations here in America. When we've talked about the causes of that 5,000 times, I won't bore you with it yet again. But that there are some unique features. There are mass shootings in other countries. They do happen more often here. And we've gone over the causes and what we could do about that many, many times. But it's not at all uncommon for someone to be murdered. Murder rates are very high in other countries as well. These things do occur. It is kind of uniquely odd to import people from countries you're at war with. Most countries don't do that. So there's something unique there. But the idea of one person being shot and killed and another person being shot and wounded is unfortunately not all that unique around the world. Violence is a real thing that has been happening. You'll go back to people like called Cain and Abel and find it going on. It is a serious problem that's been all around the world. It is getting better almost everywhere, over, especially when you look at it over, you know, half century type time periods. It's improving all the time, but it's still an unsafe place, not only here, but around the world. Ms. Beckstrom and Mr. Wolf, the latest victims of political violence permeating our society. At family Thanksgiving tables this year, the absences of Melissa and Mark Hortman, as well as Charlie Kirk, were sadly felt. It was the same for too many people whose loved ones have been killed so far in mass shootings in the United States this year, where there are more guns than there are any in any other country. I mean, to say that that has absolutely nothing to do with this, only one gun was needed for this to occur. This is not, has nothing to do with having too many guns. He didn't bring 11 guns with him and then miss with the first, you know, 11, how many would that be? Missed with the first 100 guns and then connect with the 101st. That's not the way this happened. This is just one gun was needed. There are guns all over the place. If you want to go and kill one person with a gun, it's relatively easy to do anywhere in the world. So it's just insane to blame this on guns. Vice President J.D. Vance, and look at the tone of this, immediately took to social media in the wake of the tragedy to score political points and cast aspersions on refugees from Afghanistan. I remind you, this is the same article, the same column where I just read the United States, where there are more guns than any other country. What are you doing there, New York Times? You're trying to score political points. You're trying to bring it back to your big problem with this, that you blame everything on guns. We all know you do that. But that is your version of scoring political points. And by the way, every single time one of these things goes on, people try to score political points. I mean, it is at some level true, right? Everybody tries to defend their own side when one of these things goes down. There is almost no argument whatsoever that is coherent that could bring you to blame Donald Trump or, you know, the Second Amendment for this particular story. So they reach really, really far to figure it out. As awful as one man's actions apparently were, let's just brush off the idea that this guy was even here. A crackdown on people here legally would be a mistake. This is especially true of any backlash. By the way, does this sound a lot like scoring political points yet again? Especially true of any backlash against the many Afghans who work for years alongside American troops, civil society groups, aid organizations, and journalists. They abruptly found themselves in mortal danger and needed safe haven after the American withdrawal. So here we are again. We can't have two. It's the Norm Macdonald meme. You know, God forbid ISIS sets off a nuclear weapon that kills 50 million people. What will happen to the innocent Afghans? You know, they're not the victims here. Okay. The fact that we were able and were willing as a country, as, you know, and this is not something that you or I approved, but as a nation, took in thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people from Afghanistan, does at some level show our empathy for the people who were there. And some of them did work honorably with us during that conflict. That being said, they did not need to be imported here, especially with the amount of vetting that we did. Now, there are some legitimate heroes who were Afghan nationals who helped our troops over there, saved the lives of troops. I've talked to military members who had their lives saved by regular people in Afghanistan who were fighting against Al-Qaeda, against ISIS. There are some really amazing people who were siding with us in that conflict. And that's got to be hard to do, right? You have a force that comes in that takes over the governance of your country, switches out your government, tries to, you know, revive your country and change the way the violence has permeated it all through all these years. It's probably pretty easy to want to be in the opposition against a new army coming in and doing that. I really think it's important that we don't just toss every Afghan national that helped our military off to the wayside. And we talked about this at the time, and we'll talk about how we dealt with it at the time in a second. But the wrong way to do it was to bring in tens of thousands of these people without properly vetting them, which, of course, what we did. And by the way, what we said was happening at the time. This is not some, you know, I'm not retroactively going back and trying to change history. At the time, we talked about how important it was to do this the right way. Yes, a lot of these people deserved to be taken out from under the thumb of the Taliban. It's true. Now, backing up another step before that, the Taliban should not have been in power. This is not something I asked for. This is something the Biden administration wanted and executed in the worst possible fashion. There will be, and this goes on with the New York Times to finish this up, there will be Americans who note that this tragedy could have been averted if Mrs. Beckstrom and Mr. Wolf had not been needlessly deployed to Washington in August on the order of President Trump. No one, including the president, is responsible for this tragedy except for its perpetrator. It should be possible to understand both that Mr. Trump's use of the National Guard has been outrageous and that that use did not cause the shooting. First of all, his use of the National Guard in Washington, D.C. is not been, what was the use of the word, outrageous, and has not been. That's just a mischaracterization. Of course, you know, left, they have their the right to their opinion. I will say that it's, you can always tell whether they feel like they're on the right side of this or not. Are they pushing against the stream, or are they pushing with the current? Because normally, when they're pushing with the current, every single gun owner is responsible for mass shootings. The Second Amendment, generally speaking, is responsible. The NRA is responsible. Everybody outside of the actual gunman is responsible. In this case, oh, it's only the gunman that's actually responsible. They must know they're up against it here. Because who's responsible here? Of course, you can't control whether one person does something terrible. We have people, we have our own citizens who do plenty of terrible things. This is why you don't import more of it. Right. We have enough crap going on here already without bringing in people who will kill us from foreign conflicts with nations we were at war with very recently. It doesn't make any sense to import more of that. If you import somebody like that, you better freaking be sure things go well. You know, this is goes back to the Dukakis campaign, or is it? Yeah, it was Dukakis. Where he had a program, I'm testing my own memory here on the fly, but he had the program where he was letting a bunch of people out of prison on release programs, and one of them famously went, and I was going to say his name, but I'm going to guess it wrong. It's been so long. Willie Horton, was it? I can't remember. Anyway, I could be mangling five different stories there, but it also could be right, and that's what you get from this program. It could be right. Anyway, the information you hear here could be right. He went and killed somebody, I believe, sexual assault and killed somebody or something. I don't know. Anyway, that information that could be right reminds me here, because if you do one of these programs and everything goes swimmingly, no one really complains about it. You might say this is a bad policy, but without that example, it doesn't necessarily hurt you politically. This is the example of a horrible policy that was executed really, really poorly, that when someone who breaks from the stream and winds up committing a murder or two, you should get the blame for it, because it was you stepping out, right? Like, you were the one that took this big risk. You were the one vouching for these people. You're the one that did the vetting. And they're trying to turn this around on Trump, which is completely bonkers, frankly, but they're attempting it anyway. By the way, they had advance warning of this. Advocate warned Afghan evacuee was not functional as a person months before the National Guard shooting. No surprise there. Kristi Noem was on being asked about this. They're trying to, of course, put this on the Trump administration. Here's what she said.
President Trump on Thursday promised to, quote, permanently pause migration from all third world countries. Is the administration ending all legal immigration into the United States?
The president is absolutely determined to stop all processes at this point in time from third world countries until we can have a thorough opportunity to go through these individuals, know that they're here for the right intentions, and that they even should be in our country to begin with. He's putting Americans first, their safety first, And these third world countries don't have stable governments. They can't sustain them. They can't tell us who they are. And that's really the consequence of what we're seeing unfold with the violence on our streets, is because these countries that people have been traveling to our shores from for so many years under the Biden administration, their governments didn't tell us who they were. We don't have a proper vetting process. So that's one of the things I'm so grateful for, is that President Trump has been bold enough to say, you know what, we're going to stop. We're not going to allow this to continue until we have a process in place that ensures that it actually has integrity for people that will protect us and keep us safe.
She's hitting on something here that is really important, because, you know, Trump, obviously, you know, he'll put out a statement and it's not always the most finely tuned, crafted type of thing. Right. And like, that's not what he does. That's not what people want from him. They want him to just kind of say, hey, this is what's going on. And he said, hey, we're going to ban everybody from third world countries. Well, that to some, and we'll get into one person in particular who apparently believes that what that means is, oh, well, we don't want people who look differently from us. We don't want people from African nations. We don't want people from poorer nations that come here and they look different than us. And that's being racist. The reason why the third world country part of this is important, and I think what are you supposed to call them now? There's a whole new term for them. The global south, I think, is what you're supposed to call third world countries now. I don't know. I'm not doing that. The reason why that's important is because these countries, generally speaking, do not have the capacity, do not have the money, do not have the resources, do not have the ability, or in many, many cases, the intent to properly screen the people in their own countries. They aren't monitoring crime like they are here. You don't have accurate crime statistics. You don't know what these people are doing on a day-to-day basis. And I don't mean us, I mean them. They don't know. They aren't keeping track. It's not like it is here. They're worried about feeding their people, okay? They're not worried about every little thing that goes on. So when there is a crime that's committed, that doesn't always hit the books. There's a lot of bribery that goes on. There are people who do things and get away with it much more often than they do in a European nation, or here, or any really high income type nation, whether it's in Asia or wherever else. The point is, you can't trust the vetting process from a lot of these countries because they don't have anything to even vet people in their own country, let alone vet them to the levels that we should accept them here in the United States. That's why that distinction is important. It's because you're trying to depend on a system that doesn't exist. You can't. A lot of these things are really difficult to vet. Now, there's been some cases where this has been possible. It is possible in certain limited circumstances, but you're always taking a risk with this stuff. And we don't have to do that. We don't have to take risks like that. It's just a matter of whether we choose to or not. Pam Bondi was also on Fox News talking about that. And here's what they're talking about as far as efforts ongoing.
Working hand in hand with Secretary Noem, Homeland Security. Director Patel has already arrested 500 suspected terrorists since January 20th. We're working hand in hand with Pete Hegseth. And yes, we are bringing in our National Guard to every city we possibly can. Who needs our help? And that's a lot of them. We're tied up, as you know, in a lot of court hearings right now. These young men and women in the Guard, they want to help our country. They want to be here. They are patriots, yet they will not be attacked by a radical Islamic terrorist who screams by reports, Ali Akbar, before shooting two of our Guard members and almost killing more.
As you can see, quite plainly, they are not planning on backing down from this. That's not going to go on. I wanted to play this one other clip, though, from Mark Kelly, who sucks. I mean, Mark Kelly sucks. But he was on doing the rounds this weekend, and he wanted to address this third world potential ban for new immigrants in the near future. Here's how he translated this.
When I heard the secretary say that they're going to pause immigration from third world countries, I mean, I take that as a message that they don't want brown people coming to the United States.
Okay.
And I find that disturbing.
Mm. Do you?
We are a country that has always welcome individuals that are struggling, that are fleeing famine and violence. And it would be a fundamental change to the fabric of our nation to change that.
I love that. When I heard the secretary say something, I decided to change it to something else that would be more offensive. And then I decided to repeat that, and then to say that thing that I just made up that wasn't actually said is disturbing. Great analysis there, Mark. Much appreciated. Well, look, here's the truth. And I've said this from the very, very beginning. If Joe Biden was actually a competent president in every realm, if he was a solid president for, let's say, a Democrat, and he was able to, he did a good job. I don't know what that looks like, but like, let's imagine a world where we can figure it out. If all the only bad thing he did was the Afghanistan withdrawal, that would be enough to get him out of office. And that goes to his terrible running mate and eventual replacement on the ticket, Kamala Harris, as well. If you are associated in any way with that, bye-bye. Number one, anyone who would think that that was a good effort and then defend it afterward and say it went well never deserves to be near the levers of power ever, ever again. It is one of the greatest national embarrassment. My take is it is the worst embarrassment in my lifetime when it comes to foreign affairs that this country has ever been ever participated in. It is a disgrace in every single way. And then, of course, they added on to that by taking these people that they could not vet and dumping them into this country, into situations which, by all indications, this guy wound up in a terrible situation where he couldn't afford his rent, where he was down on his luck, where the nation had let him down. He fought for the nation, and now the nation let him down. That's his mindset. Well, you know, you can't let that happen. It shouldn't have happened in the first place, but it did. And you have to be actually intelligent to deal with these situations. The left is now out there saying, well, this is Trump's fault. He's the one that that approved the claim of asylum. And they're saying, well, these people would have never been murdered if they weren't there, which is a fascinating your skirt is too short argument against the military members who are out there actually trying to protect people. That's a fascinating way. Were they out there? Are we not allowed? Should we not be able to expect the safety of law enforcement when we put them on the streets? We should just expect them to be shot. They deserved it. That's what we should expect now. Well, you can't do anything about it. They were out there. She was walking down the alley and she had a short skirt on. What do you expect? Disgraceful. We all knew that was disgraceful as of last week, but this week that argument serves the left, so we're supposed to make it. Look, you can't blame Donald Trump on this. You can't blame the right on this. This is your withdrawal. You own that withdrawal. You own the vetting system. You own bringing this guy in here. You own all of this stuff through all of this time. And instead, they're trying to blame the right because they have a series of really terrible points built on top of a series of really terrible points. And of course, the hilarious part about all of this is if Trump had come in and said, OK, after you've been here for 5 years, we're going to reject your asylum claim. He would have been on the news for being so mean to Afghans for rejecting it. Now they're trying to blame Trump for accepting the process that had begun under the Biden administration. I will say this, and if you want to look for a sane part of this, you probably know that there were good people in Afghanistan who helped our military. That is true. And a lot of those people were evacuated, but they weren't all evacuated through the Biden administration. You may very well have helped some of those people get out through Mercury One. Mercury One, of course, is Glenn Beck's charity, who worked really hard. It's one of the things I'm most proud of in my entire time working here. The people that were able to be rescued from Afghanistan due to the audience and your help, that all happened. Zero of the people that were taken out of Afghanistan came to America. That was not what we did. We were helped them get to third party countries, countries that were willing to accept that risk. They knew that there was a risk when it comes to vetting. We did everything we could to vet them as best as possible. And I think they did a very, very good job when we're talking about Mercury One doing that. I've heard of no problems from that crew at all. But still, we still made sure none of these people came here. This is a country we were just at war with, okay? So you don't know what you're gonna get out of that. We tried to do our best, but the fact is that we wound up saving a lot of really good people, and that is a worthy effort, but you have to do it in an intelligent way, and that is not something you can ever say about the Biden administration. I'm gonna bring in Camden Mulder from National Review next. She's got something on the pro-life movement and where that is going right now that I think will be interesting to you. Back in a second. American Giant became famous for what people started calling the greatest hoodie ever made. I own one of them. I can say that that is true. But the truth is, that's just the starting point. When you go to American Giant, what makes their kind of clothing different is the philosophy behind it. You know, slow down, make things well, use better material, and work with people who actually take pride in what they're doing. Kind of a simple formula, but a difficult one to execute in this day and age. You can feel the moment that you try something on when you feel like the weight of that fabric, the way that it holds shape, the way that it seems to get more comfortable every time you wash it. And in a world where so much of what we buy feels disposable, American Giant is the opposite. Their clothes aren't meant to last a season. They're meant to be part of your life for years, forever. And they're pieces that you think you kind of reach for without thinking because they just work. Every time you put them on, they fit. They're reliable. They're made with real craftsmanship. If you're looking for great gifts that won't end up forgotten in a drawer by February, this is the place to go to find them. Get something great you're going to love from American Giant. American-Giant.com/Stew. American-Giant.com/Stew. Save 20% when you use the name Stew at checkout. American-Giant.com/Stew. Use the promo code Stew at checkout.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
I want to bring in Camden Mulder. She's a National Review William F. Buckley Fellow, and she has a brand new piece out. It's called With Planned Parenthood's Closing, Pregnancy Centers Are Ready to Fill the Gap. So be sure to check that out. We'll tweet out a link to it as well. Camden, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Hi, Stu. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I think you've hit on a really interesting topic here because you have a situation since the overturning of Roe versus Wade and, of course, Biden leaving and Trump coming in, a major change kind of at the top. There's a lot of conflicting information. One of the things we're hearing now is that all of changes in funding when it comes to Planned Parenthood are making a difference when it comes to how many Planned Parenthood locations are open and pregnancy centers, as you're talking about, filling the gap. Can you walk us through, like, what are these changes? And, for people who don't even understand, what is a pregnancy center?
Yeah, of course. So to start off, the changes are that with the passing of the Big Beautiful Bill, Medicaid no longer funds Planned Parenthood. And the narrative that Planned Parenthood likes to continue to push is that women are not getting the quote unquote health care that they need because of Trump's bill that recently passed over the summer. But the reality is Planned Parenthood is the leading abortion provider. They're not offering as much health care as they like to admit, and pregnancy centers are filling that gap. So women are able to go to pregnancy centers and get abortion pill reversals, for example, if they take a medical abortion prescription and regret that, or they get counseling. They even offer diapers and like lactation classes for women. So they're actually offering healthcare and services that are not only life-sustaining and are helping women actually have their babies and create families, but they're not providing abortions, which is what Planned Parenthood almost exclusively does.
People will be familiar on the place here with Preborn, example of one of these great pregnancy center chains that are doing great work across the country. There is a change too on the Planned Parenthood side because you mentioned this in your piece. They've changed the tactic a little bit. There used to be this safe, legal, and rare thing they used to say all the time. They used to say, oh, gosh, abortion, it's just a tiny, tiny piece of our business. No big deal. You barely even notice that we do it. That's not what they're saying these days.
No, it's not. And they are coming out, the CEO of Planned Parenthood, she came out, a couple years ago and said, you know what? Yeah, we do provide abortions and we're proud of that. And that's something that we're really happy that we're doing. And really that issue, it just stems back to Democrats not separating women's health and abortion. For them, those two things mean the same thing. And so that's really what riles up their base and that's what's getting them excited. And so then when, the Trump administration passes the Big Beautiful Bill and takes away Medicaid funding from Planned Parenthood, that sends Democrats into a spiral because they're thinking, well, this is women's health. But really, it's just providing abortions. And Planned Parenthood, I believe last year, completed almost 400,000 abortions in the U.S. And they were the leading group to, you know, do so and provide the most abortions. And so there's just no longer a difference between those two terms in the eyes of Democrats.
Yeah, it seems actually to Democrats, the only part of women's health is abortion. Like none of the other topics that I think are really, really important. I think most women would, if you drill down to it, that when they hear women's health, the abortion industry has successfully prepared that term to the extent that I don't even think decisions about health care are even made outside of the context of abortion at all, at least politically.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And we're seeing that actually this week. Tomorrow on Tuesday, there's a case that's going to be heard in front of the Supreme Court, First Choice versus Plotkin. It's in New Jersey. And with this case, the state of New Jersey went after a pregnancy resource center because they're claiming that they were not transparent enough with the public that they had, you know, a pro-life mission. So they're asking for access to donor records, marketing materials, all of these things. And the deeper concern there is that it's creating this witch hunt for people that are, you know, pro-life and pregnancy centers that are looking to help sustain life, help women make pro-life choices. And so the oral arguments tomorrow and just the progression of that case in general in the Supreme Court, it's going to be really interesting to follow and could have some really broad repercussions for not only the conversation about abortion in general, but just the support that pregnancy resource centers receive.
Yeah, you know, it's the vilification of these pregnancy centers is maybe the most perplexing thing out of all of this. I mean, these are people who are trying to make a difference. They're inviting people in. They're saying, hey, you know, we'll give you free diapers. We'll give you, free health care. We'll guide you through all the difficult parts of this. We'll be there for you when you need you. I know preborn will take care of mothers, you know, multiple years after they give birth as well. These are services that we should be celebrating. These are incredible people doing incredible things. And it said they've somehow become the bad guys when the people who are ending the lives of infants are the good guys. Explain it to me.
It's almost impossible to explain because, a rational person, you would never think that saving babies and wanting people to have families would be such a horrible take. It would make you such a horrible person. But we've all driven down the street and we've seen, the protesting outside of pregnancy resource centers, people being screamed at and spit on, all these things just because they're trying to make a different choice than what the Democrats want you to make. And it's what's really concerning, too, is that, 60% of women said that if they were aware of the resources that pregnancy centers provided, they probably would not have had an abortion and they would have kept their child. So that number, while it's high and, given all the abortions that have already been completed, it's discouraging. It's also simultaneously very encouraging because these resource centers are getting more traction, getting more press. People are better understanding what they do and what they provide. So hopefully more women will, choose life in the future.
And that would be fantastic. And I think these organizations are out there trying to do this work, and I think they're doing a great job. But you do see that when we look at polling, for example, of young women, it's overwhelming that they are on the pro-choice side. Now, there are some hints of an increasing pro-life movement, and we obviously have had the positive changes in the legal realm since Dobbs. But this is a situation where the left continually is able to win elections, going to younger female voters and saying they're trying to basically turn this into Handmaid's Tale. And that continues to work. How does that get reversed?
It might just take, it might just take a complete swing in the opposite direction and a complete move to the most extreme for people to really realize what's going on. I mean, we have young women that are getting their drinks spiked with abortion medication and are almost losing their babies. And it's horrible to think that that might have to happen for people to realize it. And we obviously don't want that to happen, but it seems with some of these events that are occurring, people are starting to understand the severity. But like you said, the left keeps winning elections on this issue. And so much of it is just the marketing. As we were saying earlier, when you frame abortion as a right, it, gains more traction and people are far much more supportive of that versus when you say, oh, it's killing babies. And so it'll just be really interesting to see going forward if people recognize just the damage that this is causing. And if, you know, people are turning back to religion more than they have been in recent years too, especially Gen Z. And so it'll be interesting to see if that changes the tide at all going forward.
Yeah, I wonder too, if there's, you know, the media is such a big part of this. I think people, you know, you ask younger women about this, and they think that, you know, there's just this evil cabal of Republican politicians, you know, in states, just, you know, I mean, as much to all the way up to the levels of killing women, killing mothers. These reports that come out that say that, oh, these women were denied access to abortions and they died in the hospital. And time again, when you look at the details of the cases, it's actually the reverse. It's abortion pills that were taken that are responsible for these terrible incidents. Is there any way, I know you're working as hard as you can to just give clear, honest reporting on this issue. Is there anything that we can do to try to get the word out so that people understand what's actually happening? Because I feel like if people understand the real details of this, they will change their opinions.
Women just need to keep coming forward and sharing their stories and talking about not only positive experiences that they've had at pregnancy resource centers, but also the experiences they've had at Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, for example, if you take the, you know, medical abortion drugs from there, they tell you if you have complications and you have to go to the hospital, don't say that you're having an abortion, say you're having a miscarriage. But there are different ways that doctors handle treatment for those two different things. An abortion treatment and a miscarriage treatment are very different ways to be treated at the hospital. And that's when you have those examples, like you said, Stu, where women are going in and they're having these horrible reactions. It's because they're not being treated accurately for what they're going through. But if more women can come forward and explain what's happening, not only behind the doors of Planned Parenthood, but also behind the doors of the pregnancy resource centers, I think we can really help bridge the gap on those two issues and get people more clear and more accurate information.
Yeah, just to be clear, if you happen to be someone who's in the situation or have a relative who's in the situation, there are no laws in any of these evil red states that would prevent you from getting treatment if something like this is going down. You're not going to be thrown in prison because you had an abortion go wrong. Am I right on this? Camden, there's no state that has any law like that, yet the media continually reports this sort of stuff.
No, definitely not. And, you know, hospitals, doctors, everyone, the bottom line is they want people safe. And you can go to the doctor, you can get the help you need. Abortion pill reversal often works within 72 hours of taking the first dose of the abortion drug. And so it's just really important if you're having adverse reactions or second guessing anything to get the help you need.
Camden Mulder, a National Review William F. Buckley Fellow. Be sure to check out her new piece. With Planned Parenthood's closing, pregnancy centers are ready to fill the gap. These are great organizations that can really use your support, and they're doing really hard work and important work. Camden, thanks so much for covering this and coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Some interesting lines developing as it comes to the Venezuela situation and these boats that have been being attacked by our military off the coast of Venezuela. Republicans are now demanding a probe into these boat strikes. And this is interesting, especially because of a new report that came, I think, from The Washington Post, which quoted inside sources, and there's no disagreement so far, at least from military sources, that this was what had happened. Basically that I think it was the first or second boat, I can't remember, they attacked it, and a couple of people survived the initial attack when they blew up the boat. They were kind of hanging out into the, you know, wreckage of the boat, like, you know, Titanic, like, right? You've got Leonardo DiCaprio kind of hanging onto the water in the boat. And they just decided to then, even though they were incapacitated, go and kill them anyway, kind of a redo. Right. That's not normally something that you would do. And Pete Hegseth said the report was that he verbally ordered all people aboard a suspected narco trafficking vessel to be killed in looking for the investigation. Not just, of course, the people that you would expect, which, of course, would be the people on the left who have a problem with any time that we do anything to a criminal or a terrorist, but also Roger Wicker of Mississippi, Republican, and Representative Mike Rogers, who leads the House Armed Services Committee. Lots of questions about the legality of this. Andrew McCarthy has written about this. Again, we've talked about his writing before. And, you know, Andrew McCarthy, he's at National Review, but he was one of the lead guys prosecuting terrorism back before 9/11, right? Like, this was his gig. And he is known as a guy who's pretty tough on terrorists and terrorism. Like, not a guy who just, you know, in fact, the left accuses him of going too far in trying to put people behind bars and prosecute terrorism. But he says this. He says, if you believe the argument that our forces are in armed conflict with non-state actors, suspected members of drug cartels designated as a foreign terrorist organization, the laws of war still do not permit the killing of combatants who have been rendered out of the fighting, including by shipwreck. To reiterate, even if one overlooks the administration has not proven that they are drug traffickers or members of terrorist organizations, there is no armed conflict. They may be criminals, but they are not combatants. Nevertheless, even if you buy the claim that they are combatants, it is a war crime to intentionally kill combatants who have been rendered unable to fight. Now, look, the weird thing about this particular case is that no one really wants to talk about it because no one's really all that upset with the idea that, you know, potential narco terrorists are dying. And I'm with you on that. Like, I have no love for them. But again, process is important. And a lot of this stuff happens. A lot of the problems that the Trump administration runs into, you're seeing this in the Supreme Court now as they go through the tariff situation, is they don't follow through with the basic process that needs to be followed. You have to do these things the right way. And a lot of times, Trump, I think, with good intentions, says, look, I'm sick of you guys getting in my way. We need to do X, Y, and Z. But if you don't do X, Y, and Z in the right order through the right rules, a lot of times it winds up biting you at the end. So we have that going on. Also, a bigger news, much bigger news than that. Cory Booker, tears of rage. Cory Booker, they've been turned into tears of joy. Mm-hmm. Cory Booker marries Alexis Lewis in separate New Jersey, D.C. ceremonies. Wait, they didn't even go to the same wedding? Well, did they do this over Zoom? What do you mean separate? That would be funny if they just had just like walking down the aisle and they had Zoom. They didn't really want to be close to each other. A lot of people don't really have that the high hopes for the closeness of their relationship. I'm not one of those people. I'm very excited for him and very happy. But I would be shocked if they did the thing over Zoom. Apparently, no, they were in the same location in two different places. I don't know, to get the most wedding cake possible. Back in a second. Buying or selling a home sucks almost all the time. It's one of those things that looks simple from a distance, but then sucks when you actually have to do it. You realize how many ways it can go wrong. Well, realestateagentsitrust.com doesn't just hand you a list of names and wish you luck. They do the work up front. They vet the agents across the country to make sure you're connecting with someone who actually knows your market, someone who knows how to navigate complicated situations and has a real track record of putting their clients first. These aren't part-timers. They're not relatives of a friend of a friend of a friend's former roommate. These are people who have had their license for a while. They know what they're doing. They've had great results. And they're professionals who make a living doing this really well. And when you're making the biggest financial decision of your life, that experience really matters. The right agent can help you avoid costly mistakes, negotiate confidently, and move through the process with clarity instead of stress. Whether you're buying your first home, whether you're selling a place that you've lived in for a long, long time, or you're relocating across the country, realestateagentsitrust.com can help you. Go there. It's a free service to you. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. Okay, so here's what happened. Terrible medical news on the Kardashian front. Mm-hmm. It's sad, but true. You thought she was the smartest person in the world. You thought she had the biggest brain, but apparently not.
What the holes mean is low activity. Compared to this one, uh-oh, the front part of your brain is less active than it should be.
Uh-oh.
With your frontal lobes as they work now, it would be harder to manage stress. And that's not good for you, especially as you're studying and you're getting ready to take the boards.
Your brain
doesn't work.
That
just can't be. It just can't. Not accept.
I'm accepting. It can be. It can be, Kim.